afternoon. I call to order the Senate Housing and Homelessness Prevention Committee. We do have a quorum present. And to set the stage for today, we have one bill before us. We will be hearing the Housing Finance Supplemental Budget Bill. With that, Senator Port, to your Senate File 4158.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Nice to see you all. I will first ask, I have a DE, the A3, that puts the bill in the correct order, if we can move the A3.
Senator Port moves the A3 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion carries. Amendment is adopted. Senator Port.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then I have the A4 amendments, which is a primarily technical amendment. The first portion of it restricts the amount of the appropriation that can be used for administrative costs to 1%. The middle part updates some dates, and the bottom part, I'm going to ask Ms. Painter to explain.
Ms. Painter.
Madam Chair and members, the revisor instructions on line 1.14 to 1.17 just move a subdivision that was put in the wrong place in last year's session law. It just makes that fix. And then the last part is amending the title.
Senator Port. Senator Dreheim.
Thank you. I'd like to just talk about the first two paragraphs of the A4, if I could, Chair. I understand why you put in the 1% admin costs, but I mean, just so the rest of the committee understands, you know, for years we've heard from the agency that when we've attempted to direct Pool 3 funding from the agency, that they need that for cushions for doing different things. And I have a hard time, even though it's not a lot of money, giving the agency 1% on a report for the homeless. And, to me, they should be able to absorb that. And then same with the senior project on 1.6 to 1.8. That to me, they could absorb that as well. I'm sure both programs aren't funded for what they requested. So just my two cents, I'm not gonna do anything about it. I can count, we don't have the votes to delete those or shrink that 1%, but I just wanted to comment on that on the record, that it's disappointing that we have to do that. So thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Port, I want to give you a chance to respond, and then I think Mr. Mueller has some comments about that as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Dreheim. I understand where you're coming from. The reasoning for putting this in was that under the statute, they can automatically take up to 5%, and I wanted to make sure, because they were small projects, that it was limited to just the 1%.
Mr. Mueller.
Madam Chair and members, just a note about that language, especially the citing of 16B.98 subdivision 14. That was included in the state government bill last year, and it applies to all agencies for new grants, so that any agency can keep up to 5% for named grants and up to 10% for competitive grant programs. In talking with Housing Finance Agency, and how they're dealing with a lot of the new programs that we set up last year, they're still figuring out if they're going to keep some percentages of that amount that we appropriated last year. So this is being somewhat proactive in making sure that whatever programs we set up this year at least have a ceiling.
Senator Lucero, and then I'll go to Senator Housley.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Dreheim brought up the exact point that I was going to bring up as well. So in these two, and I was debating whether to bring this up now during the amendment or during the commissioner's later testimony, which I think is scheduled here. And so I guess the question I was going to have was, these are direct appropriations to entities. So it's not a program where they're soliciting applications and have to spend staff time reviewing applications and making decisions. Essentially, I look at the agency just a pass-through. to send these two checks, one check for $500,000, one check for $3.25 million. So I appreciate putting the 1% in there, but honestly, I think we should change the 1% to 0%, because if I understand correctly, we're gonna appropriate this to the agency, they're gonna turn around and just write a check for approximately $3.25 million, and then they're gonna be permitted to siphon off $35,000 for what? What, how much time do they actually put into that? So anyway, I'm on the same thinking here, but let's put it to zero and have them absorb these minuscule costs. So just feedback. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Housley.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Lucero. I'm sorry I missed the huddle before that, before this committee, because that was exactly my point, was it's $35,000 just to write two simple checks. I think that's kind of a lot of money. That was my point. Thank you.
Any other discussion on the A4 amendment? All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed say no. Motion carries. Amendment is adopted. Senator Port.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, in a moment, I'm going to have Mr. Mueller run through the spreadsheet for the bill. But first, I do want to take a moment to acknowledge Mr. Mueller's 30 years of service to the Senate and the incredible job that he does for our committee every day, but the work that he has committed for many years to help us do this work. So thank you, Dan. We really appreciate you. I'm sure you're mad at me now. But if you would mind, please going through the spreadsheet.
Mr. Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Port. The spreadsheet is should be in your packet. It's a one-page spreadsheet. The committee was given a target of $10 million of one-time money and then $1 million of money in the tails, and that is for the $50 million of HIBs, housing infrastructure bonds, and the starting of paying off the debt service for that. So in the, I'll start off on the top of the spreadsheet. Line number three appropriates $8.804 million for additional money to the Family Homeless Prevention Assistance Program. So this would be in addition to what was appropriated last year. Last year there was $55 million appropriated in fiscal year 24. And then $10.2 million appropriated in fiscal year 25. So this 8.8 would be added to the 8.2 that was in last year's budget bill. Line number four is the homelessness study for the Wilder Foundation. This is from Senate File 4592, Senator Zhang. That's for $500,000. Line number five, the Wilder Senior Housing Rehabilitation Project. From Senate File 4678, Senator Murphy, and that's for $3.25 million. Line number six is a new sort of one-time program directing, it's called the Housing Affordability Preservation Investment Program, and it's a recapitalization program that Housing Finance Agency will be offering using $50 million of money that has been redirected from the cash for HIBs that we did last year. So there's $40 million that comes off that program, and that's on line eight. And then there's another basically $10 million from community stabilization that is also going into that program. Line number seven, is the expediting rental assistance. There are four sections in the bill that deal with the Senate File 4704 bill that asks for different studies to be completed by Housing Finance Agency working with Human Services, and this would help pay for that $471,000. Line number eight, again, I mentioned a $40 million reduction for the cash HIBs that was appropriated last year. And what was appropriated last year was $100 million in fiscal year 24 and $100 million in fiscal year 25. So that would bring that second year down to $60 million. And then line number nine is basically a $10 million reduction from the community stabilization program. That money moves into the recapitalization program, and the other $3.25 million basically freed up money for the Wilder Senior Housing project. Then the last item in the bill is line number 12, is a appropriation to the Department of Labor and Industry. This is from Senate File 3538 from Senator Port, and $225,000 for a single exit stairway apartment building report. And then, again, the last item on the spreadsheet is carrying the debt service of the $50 million of housing infrastructure bonds that is being carried in this bill. The debt service will start in fiscal year 27 at $1 million. And then beyond that, I'll just mention it's $2.8 million in fiscal year 28. And then it'll go up to $4 million in fiscal year 29 and later. And Madam Chair, that is it for the spreadsheet.
Thank you. Senator Port, Senator Dreheim.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Chairs. Mr. Mueller, on the debt service, historically it's been one number the first year and then a little higher number 2 through 20, I guess. Why do we have a step up in 28?
Mr. Mueller.
Madam Chair and Senator Dreheim, MMB did some new calculations this year based more on historical trends that there really is sort of a three-year phase now of how HIBs, the debt service, gets paid. It is, so it starts off at a, it assumes a 25% sort of the first year, about 45% the second year, and then third year it's like 30%. So it does step up, and it takes basically 3 years to fully start paying the full amount of the debt service.
Senator Dreheim.
So, sorry, Mr. Mueller, so the first year it's 25%?
Mr. Mueller.
Of the debt service?
Yeah. Madam Chair, Senator Dreheim, yes, it's 25% the first year, then another 45% the second year, and then the last 30% is the third year.
Senator Dreheim.
Through the 20th year, I assume, then. Okay. And then my last question, if I could, Chair. What is the total debt service then for the $50 million in housing infrastructure bonds over the life of the bond?
Mr. Mueller.
Madam Chair, Senator Dreheim, I have it. I'll have to look it up and I'll get back to you before we finish here.
Thank you.
Senator Port, any
thank
other
you.
Comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Mueller, for walking through that. I won't do a big conversation on this. I think it's a pretty straightforward bill. We know that stable housing is the foundation of safety, wellness, and growth in our communities. Strong investments in housing stability and homelessness prevention will lead to better educational outcomes for our kids, improved health outcomes for families, and better pathways to careers and growth in our communities. This bill establishes those goals with family homelessness prevention, as well as creative new efforts to preserve our existing affordable housing opportunities through a new housing affordability preservation initiative. Every family deserves a safe and stable place to call home, and these important provisions will be especially impactful to low-income families, seniors, and working families in Minnesota. I think mostly I want to remind members that this is a supplemental budget the year after our full budget, where we did two-thirds of $1 billion towards production and really a huge investment into home ownership through down payment assistance and other projects. This is really the small amount we got this year. It is really working to specifically address both the family homelessness crisis that we are facing and also the potential loss of some of our deeply affordable supportive housing. That is the basis for this bill. I believe there are testifiers, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Port. Yes, we will move to testimony. We have a number of people on the list, so I would ask testifiers to be concise and limit your testimony to 2 minutes. The first testifier will be Kelly Law. After that, Deidre Schmidt. You can come forward as well. Before we start testimony, I am going to turn back to Mr. Mueller for the answer to the previous question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Dreheim, my calculations, and it may not be totally correct, it's an estimate, for the cost of $50 million of HIBs, the repayment will be roughly about $75.8
million. All right. Ms. Law, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Bolden, members of the committee, my name is Kelly Law, and I'm a senior policy and field building advisor with the Metropolitan Consortium of Community Developers, or MCCD. MCCD is a consortium comprised of nonprofit affordable housing developers and economic development organizations operating in communities across Minnesota. We are supportive of the Senate Housing Omnibus Bill and thankful for Chair Port's leadership last session and this session on affordable housing investments and policy changes. As you go into conference committee with this bill, we hope that additional policy provisions included in Senate File 4158 can be included to support our existing supply of deeply affordable housing. Since housing infrastructure bonds were created in 2012, the legislature has invested nearly $700 million, helping to permanently house 7,000 Minnesota households across the state. Right now, about one-third of those households are at risk of losing their housing because nonprofit affordable housing providers are struggling to keep their properties open through no fault of their own. Over the last year, property insurance premiums have increased by an average of 38%, but are as high as 50% in some instances. Many of the properties at risk of closure or sale house residents that need supportive services. However, the full amount of services dollars needed is never fully covered. Our members will always do their best to accommodate their residents, but after the federal COVID-19 rental assistance programs ended, our members are seeing more residents unable to cover the full their full rental payments. And finally, these properties require new security services, including upgraded locks, cameras, and on-site security. These unprecedented challenges have further destabilized an already fragile housing system. We ask that, as negotiations continue for a final housing bill, that you consider supporting dedicated funding for recapitalization and preservation of existing deeply affordable housing so that we can ensure that Minnesotans who are currently stably housed can remain in their homes. Thank you, Chair Port and members of the committee, for bringing this bill forward, and thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, Deidre Schmidt. After that will be Ellen Solly. Ms. Schmidt, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Hello again, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senator Port. My name is Deidre Schmidt, and I'm the president and CEO at Common Bond Communities. We serve a diverse set of resident needs in 50 Minnesota cities. Average household income of our residents are $22,000 a year. Half of our residents receive rental assistance through federal rental assistance programs. About a third of our residents are seniors. 3,000 children make homes with us. And we serve many folks with special needs, including several hundred units of supportive housing for those who have significant barriers to maintaining housing. And all Common Bond residents have access to advantage services. We have a tough job. I just want to say, I think you all have a harder job. I've watched in these last two legislative sessions just the flood of concerns and requests for funding and for your time and focus. And I've been watching as the legislation has evolved. And it's evolving as you've realized how really difficult and complicated our housing delivery system is. It is, in fact, an ecosystem where the distress of residents and the difficulties of properties and the compromised health of both nonprofit and for-profit housing organizations and the actions of private capital providers all are interfacing with government funding, policy, and regulation at all levels. But I want to assure you that our interests are aligned on many levels. It's not in owner interest to have rent-burdened residents. Last year in Common Bond Properties, we had over 1,000 households who were eligible for eviction for non-payment of rent. Thanks to philanthropy, our efforts, and the emergency rental assistance that you helped trigger, we were able to avoid eviction in virtually all of those cases. I urge you to continue to push for rental assistance and to view it as an alternative to rent control to benefit both residents and property health. It's not in resident interest to live in properties where rents cannot cover the expenses of operation because it reduces the amount of staffing and delays and can even defer maintenance that's required for good quality living. Most of our properties are in the situation that I just described, more than the last time I gave testimony. And if it weren't for our fundraising efforts and the SHORP assistance that you triggered last year, that we would not be able to keep our lights on. And finally, it is not in the public or private funders' interest to have residents, properties, and owners struggle as we are now. Many lenders and investors are becoming more cautious about investing in new and preserving existing affordable housing because they see an increased risk of difficulty and default. What I am truly impressed by is what you were able to accomplish last session, 4D, sales tax, and so many other funding efforts, and I am so grateful for what you're attempting to accomplish this year, even in the context of fewer resources. And in particular, I want to voice my support for Housing Affordability Preservation Investment Program, which seeks to restructure and reinvest in properties whose physical and operating costs cannot be addressed by owner actions alone. Please understand that reestablishing the health in our affordable housing system is a multi-year investment, and know that we intend to be here working next to you as you step up to the challenge because it is in our common interest. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Next will be Ellen Sally, and after that will be Cody Fisher. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm Ellen Sally from the Family Housing Fund. And in March, I testified in front of this committee, and I'm pleased to be here today, again, to voice my support for several components of this consolidated bill. And today, I'm representing the Family Housing Fund and the Greater Minnesota Housing Fund, and both organizations support Senate File 4940. This consolidated bill represents the work of many, including partners in the housing community who have been steadfast in highlighting the need for policy changes and more resources to ensure continued investment in vital rental housing infrastructure. This bill also weaves together components that will help our neighbors maintain housing stability. And I want to highlight two specific areas in the bill that are meaningful. First, we support the Housing Affordability Preservation Investment Program funded through $40 million in previous housing infrastructure bonds, cash, and the redirection of $10 million of community stabilization funds. This bill creates a new definition of recapitalization to support distressed existing affordable rental buildings. When I testified in March, I shared the significant financial pressures that affordable rental housing providers are facing. Recapitalization of existing rental housing is essential because these existing rental housing developments are home to low-income families who rely upon this housing. Second, there are a number of components in this consolidated bill from the work group on expediting rental assistance and proposed money for FHPAP. I was an active member of the work group and fully support the items included in this bill and this entire set of recommendations put forward by the work group. My work in emergency financial assistance highlights the complicated system that one has to navigate to secure financial assistance. We can build a better system, and this consolidated bill and funding provides a framework to do so. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next is Cody Fisher. And Nancy Nord-Bentz, you can come forward as well, as you will be next. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
My name is Cody Fisher. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I am president of Footprint Development, a small-scale local developer of energy-efficient multifamily housing and walkable transit-rich neighborhoods. I'm here to speak in favor of Article 2, Section 27 of this housing bill, which provides funding and direction to the Department of Labor to produce or contract for a study of single-stair apartment buildings. While the details may seem extremely technical, the end result of single-stair building code changes could be game-changing in the number of housing units that could be built in our state. Minnesota's current building codes work well for single-family houses built on large greenfield sites. They work well for large apartment buildings with hotel-like double-loaded corridors, but there is a type of building in the middle that has been missing in America for the past few generations, and that is the small apartment building. In my day job, I built a number of small apartment buildings in Minneapolis. I do my best to bring the highest architectural quality possible to my tenants while remaining affordable, but I've had the opportunity to travel abroad, and I can't help but notice the shortcomings of my own projects. My units are largely studios and one bedrooms. I don't have much to offer families. Each apartment usually only gets sunlight from one wall. My buildings themselves are bulkier and have less open space than you sometimes find in Europe or in the pre-war neighborhoods of cities like St. Paul and Minneapolis. Over the past few years, I have learned about how our code shapes most of these shortcomings. One issue in particular stands out, and that's stairs. Minnesota's building code requires that every apartment building over three stories have two staircases in separate shafts on opposite sides of the building. For a small site, this can be more of a challenge than it sounds. It makes it difficult to build family-sized apartments. Our code is out of step with codes in the rest of the world, and there are even a few places in the U.S., Seattle, New York City, Vermont, and most of Hawaii, that do things differently. Our current codes are largely hand-me-downs. They have a lot of outdated provisions developed through trial and error at a time when buildings were very different from how they are today. Our current rules about egress stem from provisions first introduced in 1860 in response to tenement fire in Lower Manhattan. Since then, we've developed many new measures to protect buildings. Fire engineering has advanced. We have new ways to model smoke spread and egress, but the basic code philosophy about egress, particularly double stairwells, remains the same. During this legislative session, we've spoken to stakeholders from firefighters to building code officials to affordable housing advocates about rethinking these codes. While we have not heard a consensus on how to update our code, all sides can agree more research is needed. Funding this study will provide the necessary resources we need to look at this issue with fresh eyes. Thank you for your time, and many thanks again to Senator Port for including this critical research in her bill. I look forward to the day when we can bring back affordable, small-scale, multifamily homes to our state. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next is Nancy Nord-Benz, and after that, Renee Rock.
Chair Port, Vice Chair Bolden, committee members, I'm Reverend Nancy Nord-Benz, Public Policy Manager at Beacon Interfaith Housing. We are a collaborative of over 100 congregations that creates new supportive housing, sustains 20 affordable housing developments for over 1,100 residents, and advocates that every Minnesotan have a home. I want to begin by thanking Chair Port and so many others of you for the incredible work you've put into preparing HF 4158. Your dedication to finding courageous and creative solutions to the affordable housing crisis is deeply appreciated. A provision in this bill that we especially support is the creation of the Housing Affordability Preservation Investment Grant Program, which will provide $50 million dollars to the support of recapitalization of distressed buildings. This is critical to preserving our existing affordable housing stock and improving the quality of life for our residents. We particularly appreciate the broadness and flexibility of the definition of recapitalization in this bill, which includes funding deferred maintenance, security services, insurance, capital improvements, reserves for supportive services, and operations. We asked you to include all these fundamental costs, and you listened. Thank you. This one-time funding is an important first step in mitigating the many sustainability challenges facing nonprofit providers of deeply affordable housing. We look forward to continuing discussions with you, Chair Port, and committee members to create long-term systemic solutions. The Minnesotans who need the supportive housing we create deserve no less. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, Renee Rock. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Hello, Chair Port and committee. My name is Renee Rock. I'm a policy fellow with the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless. With over 70 member organizations from across the state, we work to generate policies, community support, and resources for housing and services to end homelessness in Minnesota. We also are a member who is prioritizing the Family Homeless Prevention and Assistance Program. We want to thank the committee for including one-time funding for FHPAP in this bill. MCH has known the value of this work for many years. It's the most flexible source of preventing homelessness that the state has. Some of the key items we want to lift up that FHPAP does are the following. Local FHPAP advisory committees work together to determine how they will prioritize the funds from an expansive list of eligible uses. Homelessness is something that needs local, regional, and statewide efforts, and FHPAP allows this to happen. The funds can touch the entire housing continuum. To touch on just a few, it includes everything from outreach, flexible financial assistance, keeping a home, getting into a home, and even helping with mortgages. While the name of the program makes it seem it is only for families, it actually can be used for individuals as well. Last year, there was a tribal carve-out for FHPAP, and so does this House bill. We want to lift this up because according to the Minnesota Homeless Study, 95% of the people on reservations were experiencing unsheltered homelessness, compared to 32% in Greater Minnesota and 18% in the Seven County Metro. This is one way we can address the racial disparities we see within homelessness. Many of the eligible uses of FHPAP funds were lifted up by the Minnesota Tribal Collaborative in order for it to work with our communities. While we know the need is roughly $200 million in ongoing funding for FHPAP, we applaud this committee for investing such a significant amount of your budget towards the important program. This will go a long way in making a difference in people's lives. MCH often says that shelter saves lives and housing ends homelessness, but in an ideal world, we would be able to prevent homelessness from happening, and FHPAP is a great program to allow this to happen. Thank you for hearing my testimony today.
Thank you for your testimony. And last, we will hear from Commissioner Ho via Zoom. Welcome to the committee.
Chair Bolden, Senator Port, and members of the committee. I'm Jennifer Ho, and I'm the Commissioner of Minnesota Housing. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on your supplemental budget bill and for the thoughtful conversations this session. I also want to thank you for letting me Zoom in from my office. We just concluded a memorial service for a beloved employee of 19 years, and it allowed me to attend to both. We appreciate the inclusion of the governor's recommendation for $50 million in new housing infrastructure bonds and all of the agency's policy and technical changes. We opened the 2024 consolidated RFP last week and anticipate the $50 million in housing infrastructure bonds would be committed to projects later this year. The inclusion of the governor's policy recommendations will clarify both existing and new program language, adapt to growing needs for resources, and help us be better partners. With a $10 million one-time target, we appreciate that most of the increase is being put into the Family Homeless Prevention Program with bill language that will help expedite getting those resources into communities to help both renters and property owners pay their bills. We appreciate the goal of putting more resources into preserving the state's existing housing through the creation of the Affordable Housing Preservation Investment Program. The agency is spending significant time and resources alongside other housing funders, working with property owners to better understand and address the financial challenges they currently face. During last year's consolidated RFP, over 40% of the units we selected were for preservation. We're committed to continue to lead and to work alongside property owners and other housing funders. I do want to make the committee aware that redirecting $40 million in 2023 housing infrastructure appropriations to this new program will reduce the number of consolidated RFP applications that we're able to select this year, including for preservation. Since housing infrastructure cash and bonds are a primary source of preserving rental funding, less funding in that program will put federally rent-assisted developments further at risk of not having access to the resources they need. This includes both HUD Section 8 and USDA rural development properties. If I can take a moment, Chair, just to reference the questions that many of your colleagues raised, I would just point out that the legislative statute around how we handle named grantees requires both the agency and the recipient to do much more than write or receive a check. We're learning as we go, as we implement all the new rules around grants management, both for the 16 new programs that were created last session, as well as the 15 named grantees. But I just wanted to clarify for the record that when there's a named grantee, we still need to treat them as a grantee, which means that there's pre-award work, there's work that needs to be done to execute the contract, and there's work that needs to be done until all the funds have been accounted for. My staff and I are ready to work with you and your staff as this bill progresses, and we head to conference committee. Thanks for your continued commitment to going big so that more Minnesotans can go home. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Ho. All right, members, discussion or amendments? Senator Lucero.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the Commissioner, if she's still on. Thank you, Commissioner, for the words you just said regarding the grants, and I presume you were listening to the earlier conversation on the amendment, the A4 and the 1% of those grants. So as you just mentioned, even if there's a named grantee, there is a work that you just expressed is done before, during, and after. Is the amount of time or effort that's required in that work with a named grantee, is it dependent on the dollar amount, or is it a similar amount of effort regardless of the dollar amount?
Commissioner Ho.
Chair Bolden and Senator Lucero, we're learning as we go. We got 15 named grantees last session, and that is a lot more than we usually have. And so understanding the difference between something that's tens of thousands and something that's 100 million, you know, is a lot of what we're doing. There's a lot more cost accounting and things like that that we're doing because of this kind of new array of things that we're trying to learn how to administer. But I think one thing that I can reassure you all of is that whether the percentage is 10, 5, or 1%, that the agency isn't keeping anything that that isn't tied specifically to the cost of standing up a new named grantee or a new program.
Senator Lucero.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner, for that. And I'll end with this. If you could just briefly describe some of these efforts, just to help us wrap our mind around. So in this specific example of the Wilder Park Association, so it's a named grantee, $3.25 million. Under the amendment that was adopted, you'll be permitted then to take 1% of that, so $32,500 from that. What is the effort involved then to administer that $3.25 million to the named grantee? And do you expect it's going to cost $32,500 in terms of your efforts?
Commissioner Ho.
Chair Bolden and Senator Lucero, this is the relative sequencing of steps, and trust me, this is not the level of operational detail that I'm in when we're executing a grant, but I've been trying to understand the new requirements and the high-level impact of those. So the named grantee, we get into touch with them very quickly. One, because we want them to know that they can't actually start using the money until they have an executed contract, and the contract won't apply to anything prior to the date of contract execution. So we don't want them to end up thinking that they can use money now that they're going to get later. The named grantee needs to submit a work plan to the agency. We need to enter into a contract with the organization. When the contract is executed, that's when we write the check. Actually, I think we just do an automated deposit these days. And then on a project like Wilder Park, which is a renovation project, I think understanding whether or not the amount of this grant covers the completeness of the project or whether they're going to have multiple sources before they can actually begin the work is really important too. If there's a delay in close, then there might be a benefit to not writing the check until the date that the project begins, because the date that the contract begins, the clock begins to tick. And then what we would do, depending on whether the work was smaller or larger, is that we would probably check in as they're moving through their construction timeline to make sure that everything is going well. And then after the funds are expended, there's usually just a coming through and a cost accounting along the way. The other step that's new for us that came from legislation passed last session is that we actually have to do a pre-award risk assessment of the capacity of the organization to be able to execute what it is that the funds are intended for. and we need to have kind of a clear process around what we reviewed and our assessment of whether we were making the contract without condition or with conditions based on the understanding of the capacity of the recipient to be able to use the funds. So a lot of those are new steps in the process. It is impossible, I think, because this is not something that we have a lot of experience doing, for me to rely on our experience with what the cost of executing similar things in the past were. In fact, this is a little bit of a unique opportunity relative to the routine things that we do. So I don't know that I can speculate as to how much it will cost the agency to do it, but I can tell you that between end of session and when the post-review of funds expended occur, that could be, that could be 3 years, that could be 4 years, depending on how long it takes for the organization to be able to organize all the financing they need and to be able to complete the work, and then again the post-review of the work. So this is really a learning space for us around these types of named grantees.
Senator Lucero.
That's all I had. I appreciate the conversation. And again, I look forward to the continued detail on this. Thank you.
Senator Dreheim.
Thank you, Chair. I have a really good amendment. It's the A5.
Senator Dreheim moves the A5 amendment. I believe that's in our packets. Senator Dreheim.
Thank you. You forgot the really good part on the amendment. Chair Port, I did share this with you, and this is kind of one of my pet peeves. Every time we get a recap from the agency, we talk about units, but we really don't get the detail that I've asked for years. And we have a capacity problem. We don't have enough units. We're broken record. We talk about it all the time. So what this would do was put into statute that we need a report on unit creation. I hope you'll support it as a friendly amendment. Pretty straightforward. I'll answer any questions if anybody has one.
Senator Port.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Dreheim, I do support it as a friendly amendment.
Other questions or discussion, members? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A5 say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion carries. Amendment is adopted. Any other discussion or questions, members? Senator Port, any closing comments?
Members, I want to thank you so much for your engagement this year. Obviously, it's very different to write $1 billion bill like we got to do together last year and a $10 million bill, but I appreciate the creativity, the hard work people had bringing Minnesotan stories to this committee and making sure that we move forward with them. Thank you all for your commitment to making housing safer, more stable, and more affordable for Minnesotans. And then, Madam Chair, I move that Senate File 4158, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to Finance.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion carries, and your bill is on its way. Members, this is our last committee meeting before the third deadline on Friday. We will meet again before session ends to hold an informational hearing. Details on that are still being worked out and will be communicated as soon as they are finalized. And with being at the end of our agenda for today and having no other business, this meeting is adjourned.